Radio.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit, and welcome to A View from the Top, the TSP, that is. And this morning we have Greg Long, Executive Director. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
And Tom Trabuco, did I do that right?
You're just right, Bob.
Okay. Director of External Affairs, both of the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. Did I say that right?
That is correct.
Okay, terrific. Tom, you had sent an email and say, well, let's get things started and talk about the TSP Enhancement Act of 2009. What did it do for the TSP? What did it do for our listeners?
That's right. Well, this was really the culmination of up to 20 years of work at the TSP. Since we started in 1987, we have had a front end on the TSP that's kind of bifurcated. People had to wait 6 to 12 months before they were eligible to contribute to the TSP and to receive employer contributions. We were able over the last about 10 years ago to fill that in so new employees could put in their own dough into the TSP, but they were not yet eligible for the employer contributions until 6 to 12 months after they were hired. Consequently, people, of course, didn't sign up right away, or everyone didn't sign up right away because they weren't leaving money on the table. That is something that became possible. That's a hole that it became possible to fill in the TSP Enhancements Act. Because that act also included authorization for a Roth TSP feature. What? Now, the Roth TSP feature, which will take effect the end of next year, and contributions will first start coming in under Roth at the beginning of 2012, the first pay period of 2012, because the Roth feature advances tax collections. In congressional budgeting terms, that created the budget room to provide immediate employer contributions for FERS employees. So okay. this was kind of a bank shot, you know.
Could I give and take.
That's right.
Could I interrupt? Because sure. I made a huge mistake. I didn't introduce Tammy.
That's Tammy okay. Flanagan. I almost didn't make it here.
Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, Weekly GovExec Columnist, fellow seminar presenter. I'm sorry, Tammy.
That's okay. I'm happy to be here.
And, well, of course, we're co-hosts of the show. My name is Bob Lyons, and Dorothy is running the boards. And if you'd like to talk to us, we're at 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. All right, sorry, y'all. Let's get back to the meat.
I found it real interesting what Tom was saying already, because I know there is a small non-participation rate amongst the FERS employees, and this new legislation should help to close that gap a little bit.
Absolutely, yeah. We view it as a 1-2 punch, because first of all, it fills in that gap at the beginning. You begin getting the employer contributions right away. And then secondly, we also, in the TSP Enhancements Act, got authority to provide for automatic enrollment. In other words, when people are hired, the TSP in the future, beginning this coming August, will become an opt-out program, like the Fegley program, where you're put in unless you take a look at it and say, no, this is not something right. that I need, so I'm going to opt out.
What will be the participation rate as far as how much will be withheld from an employee's paycheck when they start under this new automatic participation?
The law provides that it can be anywhere from 2% to 5%. Our plan at this point is 3%, because that picks up the dollar-for-dollar match.
It's a major step forward as we move to close the gap up front with the immediate contributions, and then later to move into automatic enrollment. This is a step in the right direction that will eventually allow the TSP participation rate to climb in the low 80s where it is now, up in, I anticipate over a several year period, up into the 90% range.
Wow. I'm sure you all were behind this, but did you get any headwinds from Congress? Because this will cost money.
Was saying, though, about the fact that the Roth option will offset the cost of it.
And okay. That's the way that we were able to put all this together. And Tom, as he mentioned, it's been working on closing this immediate contribution issue for 20 years. And so this is the culmination of that. And as we're able to put it together with automatic enrollment and with the Roth feature and a few other features as well. But those are the three big ones. As we're able to put this package together, it translates to, in the end, having substantially greater ability to put more money in for feds immediately and then automatic enrollment and finally the Roth contributions for everybody down the road. So this is a victory for the TSP and all the participants in it.
Absolutely. Who's going to decide where the money gets invested in which fund?
That has been decided, okay. And it was decided in the legislation to keep it in the G fund until somebody exercises their option to put it somewhere else. We had initially, when we proposed it 2 years ago, recommended that it go into the age-appropriate L fund. But there was some concern about that voiced by the union representatives of employees as well as members of Congress, given the market performance over the last year and a half or so. So we ended up with the G fund, which is a very good investment, of course. Mm-hmm. The G fund, as Mike Causey likes to say, never has a bad day, and it is a very good rate of return on a stable value investment.
Before the show, we were talking about the G fund, and it always pays this great rate for what let's call it demand money. It's not like a certificate of deposit that has to stay there 6 months, 3 months, a year, 5 years. It's 1 month in, 1 month out. So it's kind of a nice deal until they decide where they want to put the money. They're making a better rate of return than they can make anywhere else on, quote, demand money. And then once they find their view of where it should go, then they click the button and move it.
That's correct. You have daily liquidity into a fund that is guaranteed by the U.S. government and generally has a rate that is in excess of what's typically offered through money market funds. That rate is determined by the Department of Treasury. Each month they announce the rate on the G fund. It's calculated by looking at Treasury securities that are between 4 years and 30. So they take a weighted average of everything that is mid maturity to long maturity, and that translates to the rate of the G fund.
So does the greater weight then get thrown towards the 30 year?
It really depends on the total number of securities in the marketplace.
Okay.
So if there are more 30 year securities in the marketplace than there are 5 and 10 year securities, then yes, it's a weighted average. You do have to, even though in most markets the G fund will pay a higher rate than the short-term money market funds, you do on occasion have inverted yield curves when you have the short-term rates are higher than long-term rates. And so that won't always be the case, but it is a great fund. It never has a bad day, just like Mike Causey said. It is true, and there are a substantial amount of participants that it's the right place for them to be.
Okay. I remember back when the TSP started 20-some years ago that we only had the three funds. And in the personnel office, sometimes we just got to the habit of saying it's the safe, the stock, and the bond fund, which might not have been the best way to describe them. But you know, the only one that everybody really understood was the word safe, and it ended up becoming one of the places people kind of reverted to whenever they got worried about their risk.
Right.
And I think that's part of our education over these years is trying to educate employees of taking risk in their future investments. So, with this week being America Saves Week, hopefully that's a good opportunity for people to start learning more about how to manage money for the future.
And we do try to get our message out through multiple mediums. America Saves Week is one of those. I was very happy to post a letter on the TSP.gov website to all participants. And while we can't necessarily endorse the America Saves Week, we certainly understand its principles and support the idea of getting behind that. We have an education team back in our office in Washington that travels around the country, and they are very busy right now in support of the America Saves and the Military Saves campaigns. We have our trainers going around supporting, trying to make sure that this message gets out throughout the uniformed services and among the federal workforce.
Yeah, I've had the privilege of hearing a couple of the training sessions put on by your trainers, and they are top-notch, and they do give you a real basic education, but the tools you need to manage for the future. So if employees want that kind of opportunity at their agency, what do they need to do? Who do they contact?
Well, there are normally people that are the agency representatives, and they, in some cases, provide direct training. Sometimes they contract with organizations that provide that. Our job generally is to train the trainer. Mm-hmm. We're not doing – well, we do have some direct employee contact, but – we've got 4.3 million participants. There's no way we can reach all of them.
Oh, come on.
We do have half a dozen trainers.
Yeah. We've got six people that they're not going to get to everybody. So what we do is try to figure out the most efficient way, and we partner with the agencies. It's really the agencies that decide how to get that message to their people. We're set up to provide the resources and the intelligence and the support materials they get there. But sometimes they work through third-party organizations, and sometimes they work through their own internal staffs. Some do a great job, and some we wish would do a little bit of a better job.
Well, they should listen to this show.
Yes, that and, helps. Yeah, there's all kind of resources.
Call in their questions, and they can email us. Now, we're February 22nd. We're at about 10:15 a.m. We're off at 10:58 a.m., but the show is archived 24/7 on NITPINC.com. NITPINC.com. Left-hand side, For Your Benefit Radio Show. Click on, and you can hear the proverbial velvet tones of Craig, Tom, and Tammy. It'll go up at about 4 o'clock this afternoon, and it'll stay on there for years. Anyway, you mentioned one thing, government guarantee, and we'll get to some of the comments from Tammy's GovExec article Friday, but I think there's a misconception that all the TSP funds are government guaranteed, the G fund clearly, mm-hmm. and I'd say probably the better part of the F with the government bonds. It does have corporate bonds in it, but the rest of them are, they're not, I mean, the stock market isn't going to go to zero. We hope. And so, but there is no government guarantee, and especially Tammy's article was about the annuity option within the TSP. And what if MetLife goes down? But we'll get to all that later. So I think it's important when you talk about education that they understand it isn't all guaranteed. Very well chosen, very risk, I would say, adverse. It's set up so that you don't have, I guess one of them has kind of like a seismograph move, right?
Well, the G fund is the only option that's guaranteed. Yeah. That's the government securities fund, and it has never had a negative day, nor will it ever have a negative day. The other funds, the F fund, which is invest entirely in bonds, does have risk of loss, as well as the C, the S, and the I funds. They all have risk of loss, and that's because you're invested in securities. You're invested in stocks and or bonds. And even the bond funds, bond prices act inversely to interest rates. So there is a risk of loss there. However, without taking risk, you don't really have potential for long-term returns. And so we do advocate that people use basic investing principles, figure out what their risk tolerance is, figure out when they need that money, and then allocate appropriately. And for the people who just don't want to do it, we have the life cycle funds, the L funds, in which all you have to do is make one simple choice. Tell us when you anticipate needing the money, whatever year that is, pick the L fund that is the year that's closest to your to that particular year. So if you're going to start drawing down on your TSP in the year 2040 or thereabouts, then the L 2040 fund is the right choice for you in most cases.
Could we drill into the L fund just for a second, not too deeply?
Okay.
But they use terms like rebalancing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you what's a rebalance?
Well, you can every day the C, the S, all of our different individual funds go up or down by some amount, and over time, if they go up or down substantially, then the the allocation that you've set up will start to change. And so it's prudent to, on occasion, rebalance. So you're basically selling the securities that grew higher. You're selling a portion of your winners, and you're purchasing a portion of the securities that didn't do as well. Now, the life cycle funds do that automatically. Matter of fact, they do that every day. So at the end of each day, we figure out where the allocation should be based on the glide path that we set up, and then we rebalance to that number. You can do it yourself. A participant could do this on their own if they wanted to, and rebalance on occasion, and some do. But the L funds are designed to do that for the participant.
Yeah, this year, I noticed we have the L2010 fund, and this happens to be the year 2010. And I'm noticing if you use the TSP website and they have the L funds with a little guideline that you can kind of push it ahead to see where it's going to end up. And this year, the L2010 fund is going to match the investment allocation of the L income fund. Mm-hmm. So does that mean that the L2010 fund is going to become part of the L income fund and we'll see another fund being implemented?
We will. Yeah, we're actually actively working on that right now. At the end of this year, at the end of 2010, in December, the L 2010 fund, those assets will dump into the L income fund. And in the beginning of 2011, we will, in January, we're figuring out the exact dates, but at some point in January, we will initialize a 2050 fund.
So there will always be five L funds. It's just a matter of every 10 years, you'll see one disappear and the other one be added.
Right.
Were they designed in such a way that it was meant for the employee to contribute all their new money into one of those funds and put all of their old money into that fund and just kind of let it go autopilot? Because I know that I've talked to people in seminars who will have 25% of their balance in the G fund, 25% in C, and then 50% in L2020. It's like, well, why are you doing that? But I know there's no restriction on that, but were they designed that way?
They were not. They were designed, and the way we view them as most efficient is if you allocate 100% of your assets to any one of those L funds. We did talk a great deal about this, is should we make that a requirement, that if you want to put your money in an L fund, that you put all of your money there. And after some give and take, after we've said, yes, it's the most efficient way is to do it 100%, but we didn't want to scare people. We recognize that anytime you're doing anything new, people don't want to jump in with both feet. They generally want to try it a little bit, get some experience, see if they're comfortable with it, and then allocate more into that choice. And so we allow it. So people do that.
Yes.
They keep their old money where it was among the individual funds and allocate new money to the L income fund. Now, what we're seeing is what we'd expect is slowly and slowly a greater allocation to the L funds as people get more comfortable with it and as people have where their new contributions start to exceed their old contributions. Mm-hmm. And that's going to take years
exactly.
for that to work through, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. It might not be the most efficient individual allocation design, but as people get more and more comfortable with the L funds, I anticipate we will get closer and closer to efficiency.
Yeah, I think comfort and then also understanding of how they're intended to work, I think, helps too.
Yes, I agree.
Knowing that as well.
Yeah, I happened to check these numbers before coming up and found that currently 15% of all new contributions are going into the L funds, and we do have a total of 182,000 participants who are 100% in one L fund.
So people are catching on.
That's right.
That's good. That's good news.
Is there an age demographic to that? Who's in the L fund? Is it people in the latter part of their career or middle career?
Or maybe which one of the L funds is most popular? Is it the L2040 or the L income?
Why don't we do that for the next show?
I'm sorry.
We love stats.
All right. Tammy mentioned in her email to me, and you all have a copy of it as well, the annual statements are going out this week or last week?
They're in process. They're actually going out in the mail right now.
Yeah, my husband got his. I got it with me.
Yeah, we send out in excess of 4 million annual statements, which is a lot of mail.
Okay, so you send these out. So you all three of you, I see them at work. People bring them in. And what could the person that maybe isn't so familiar with investing, what could they glean from that, or what should they look at to say, okay, this is what I did. I want it better next year. How am I going to do it better besides listening to this show and others?
Well, the annual statement is intended to be a snapshot. Mm-hmm. And it's, so we make sure that our participants are aware of where they stand. And we did this for several reasons. It is sending out in excess of 4 million pieces of mail is an expensive proposition. So we thought about this for a long time. You know, should we be spending participant money in this way? And we concluded that we needed to. The website, all the materials that we have are, I think, terrific. But it requires people to take action. They have to go and log into the website. They have to call up and go to their agency and to get the materials. And we know that there is a substantial number of them that don't do that. And so we needed to push the information to them. And that's what the statement does, that this lands in their mailbox so that for the people that don't go to the website, they get it and it's in front of them. And it's really a call to action. It does a few other very important things for us is people move. You know, they change their address on a regular basis, and we need to know that we have good addresses. So by knowing that a certain number of those pieces of mail don't get delivered, that allows us to understand what our challenges are on home addresses and allows us to come up with a way to fix that. When the participant gets it in the mail, there's a few key things they should look at. Certainly the balance. And they want to know that what does it look like compared to last year? What does it look like compared to their expectations? We also have a personal rate of return on there. And you know, they're, this year it's looking better than last year. That's for sure. The one thing on there which we think generates a significant amount of phone calls is the beneficiary. We had never previously put on statements up until a couple of years ago who your beneficiary is. And so now that's put in black and white on that statement. And there are some people, we hear this on a regular basis, is this is my ex-spouse from 10 years ago, and I don't want him or her to be my beneficiary. And so this reminds them that they have, a call to action. So that if they don't want that person to be their beneficiary, they call us up and they change it. Because you certainly wouldn't want your TSP, your hard-earned savings, going to somebody that you didn't want. And that's what would happen if they were deceased with that beneficiary.
Yeah, I usually warn employees around the end of January that these statements are coming out. So if you haven't updated your beneficiary, don't let your spouse open the mail. Because I have heard that story lots of times with people saying, oh, I didn't know, you know, I had to keep it up to date or didn't think about doing it whenever I got remarried. But it's easy to do. You just go on TSP.gov, get the TSP3, and can you fill it out online now? Has that been made available, or do you have to print it out and fill it out?
I think you have to fill it out because I think we do have that requirement
for the signatures.
For the signatures.
Okay. Yeah. But then you mail it in, you're done.
Fill it out, mail it, sign it, mail it in.
Yeah. And the TSP maintains those. It's not one that's going to be kept in your personnel folder at work. So it is one of the ones you have to send to the TSP.
Yeah. As regards the beneficiary, we don't want to talk about Roth IRAs today, but if somebody does set up a Roth IRA, it's a different IRA, so you have to have a beneficiary. So it's not an automatic thing that the money come in from a traditional IRA to a Roth, or maybe even from the thrift to a Roth, but it's the same. You have to set it up. But really what I was getting at is come January 1st, 2012, we're going to have a Roth TSP. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a different beast than the regular TSP. So I would imagine then that people listening, please listen and remember close to 2 years from now, that they would have to make sure that that beneficiary is on that. And I don't know if there's a default.
The Roth project is a enormous one for us.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, it's huge. The amount of things that we have to change on the TSP and that have to be, by the way, changed at agencies because the payroll and the tax reporting at the payroll at the agencies need to change is enormous. We're actually working on that now. Virtually every piece of literature that we produce is going to need to be modified. The website is going to be substantially modified. The statements that we're looking at and talking about today are going to need to be modified. The interaction we have with the payroll systems and all the agencies will have to change substantially. So we are actively working on getting that done. But as far as changes in procedures, beneficiary is just a really small one when you compare all the things that we need to get
done. And the rules with a Roth 401k, if you will, Roth TSP in this case, is different than Roth IRAs.
Yes,
and, we don't want to go there, but it's just a side comment.
I just wanted to make one ask one question about that. I think you will know the answer to this because I get questions at seminars from employees who are leaving federal service, and they're telling me that they're going to wait until the TSP gets their Roth 401k up and running so they can transfer all their money into it. And I don't think that's going to be available, is it? It's only going to be new money.
New monies.
Yeah, so that, people who have already left the government won't participate in that option when it becomes available.
That is correct.
Okay.
And, I think what you're talking about, and we've had this a couple times, you know, the idea that you could take your regular pre-tax contributions and later recharacterize them as Roth.
Right. That's what they're asking.
No.
Okay, good.
Nor would they want to, I think, because that's
depending
on
what
you
ask.
Well, you know, if they were really heck bent on doing it, I suppose they could transfer it to a traditional IRA and then transfer it to a Roth IRA and then mimic your investments. And of course, they won't get the great low administrative fee. But I mean, if they were, you know, just bent on having that done, and I'm not so sure why they would. They could do it in the back door. They can't go in the front door.
Right. And that's an IRS rule. That's not a TSP-only item that affects all.
That's why I say there are different tax issues with the Roth 401k, TSP 401k, Roth IRA, et cetera. Anyway, we don't want to go there.
Oh, I will just add one thing there because what you touch on here is that it's a tax thing. And, yes, that's exactly what we're talking about is we've spent – years in trying to help simplify the investment decision that people make, the asset allocation, how much stock, how much bond, how much domestic, how much international. And we've got challenges there in communicating that. Some people do great, and some people still aren't quite there, but we do our best in helping people and keeping it simple. One of the things that we struggle with here is now you move from making an investment decision to eventually making an investment and a tax minimization decision. And so how do we communicate that effectively to 4.3 million people that are located in every single time zone across the globe? And so we're working on it.
Right. It's, I mean, I teach moving money into a Roth IRA, and people look at me like, what planet did you come from? and the tricks with it and the analysis, you know, in theory, if you put the money into a traditional 401k, if you will, or a Roth 401k, Roth TSP, and it's in the exact same investments, they're going to have the exact same balances at the end of a period of time.
Right.
But you have to pay the tax up front. So, you know, what is that cost? But again,
I will. There's I think it's worth talking about here because, you know, there are challenges, and that's the way we looked at it is, you know, the complexity of a Roth feature is one of the concerns that we had. But then we took a look at the uniform services. We took a look at the folks that are in the military, and you know, in general, those people come into uniform services. They're young, they're, you know, in their late teens, sometimes in their early 20s. Their income is not very high, therefore they are not paying very much federal tax right now, income tax on their money. And so for those people, the Roth had a very clear benefit. If you could, at the age of 20 or 21, pay money into a plan, pay taxes because you're not paying much taxes at that point, and allow that to grow for 30, 40, maybe even 50 years in some cases inside of a Roth account, and then take all that out tax-free when you're 60 years old, that is a tremendous tax benefit. And that's really what started to change my mind as to whether we should do this.
Pursue it.
Yeah. And we decided that it is in the benefit of a lot of people, and so we decided to take on the challenge of getting it up and running.
The Roth, let's just call it the Roth. Roth means no tax after you meet some tests. But even mid-career or late career, if one can afford it to get the money in there, because it isn't necessarily designed, in my mind, just for that individual. It could be a generational thing, such that if it was left behind to an heir, they get a tax-free stream for their lifetime. They have to be quick on the trigger to do this after the day of death, but tax-free stream for a lifetime. So if you are considering estate planning, conversion to a Roth IRA or when it comes aboard, putting money into the Roth thrift. But anyway, let's get off of Roth.
Could we change gears to my column? Because I made some promises to my listeners and readers that I was going to get them some answers.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go there.
All right. Friday, I did a column on my govexec.com article on the TSP annuity option. And I wanted to explain to the readers what it was and how it worked, and just to give them an overview of it, because when you leave federal service, there's many things you can do with the money that you have saved in your TSP, one of them which is purchase a life annuity. And you know, we went through the explanation. I got a lot of comments afterwards, and the two most common comments that came from that was that if I use my TSP money to purchase a life annuity, number one, are there costs involved? Are there fees involved with that? You know, I've heard that annuities are expensive, so why should I do that? And then the second comment that seemed to be recurring was, how safe is it? What if, you know, the annuity provider happens to be MetLife? What if MetLife goes by way of AIG? Have I just lost all of my savings? So I promised that I would address those two questions with you guys to see if you had any comments about the safety of the TSP annuity, as well as the cost or the fee structure as far as how much it costs to manage it.
Well, Tammy, MetLife is our current annuity provider, and that I'm going to address the second one first, and then we'll get to the first question. What we do every few years, and we're actually working on it now, is we compete to figure out which insurance company should be the annuity provider for the TSP. That is MetLife right now. And this year we're working on rebidding it, because that's up in the beginning of next year. So we will compete that again. And one of the key things that we look at is to how we analyze potential bidders, potential providers of our annuities, is safety, the financial resources and stability, and the ability to pay of whichever company we select. And that is MetLife right now. That said, the guarantee that's provided in the annuity or the lifetime income stream is from the insurance company. It is from MetLife. And we are very closely watching the stability of MetLife. All of the insurance industry, AIG being the most obvious, has been under some level of stress. But we take a look at every company, what their rating was, their financial analysis, and we report this actually on a quarterly basis in an open session in our board meetings. I know it's picked up on occasion by the press. We are very much on top of this and making sure that the provider of those annuities is financially secure. That said, it's not a government guarantee. It's a guarantee from the insurance company. As far as the fees, MetLife is certainly in the business to make a profit. They provide a valuable service to us and our participants, but when they come up with the pricing, when they tell you that if you have X number of dollars based upon the rate today, here's what your payment stream will be for life, there is some profit percentage built into them, and as it should be. Your article I thought was excellent, Tammy. Yeah,
Thank you. You
laid out, you know, the pros and cons, and it is in effect your trying to decide, am I going to outlive the company's assumption of how long I'm going to survive? And if you live longer than they think you're going to live, then it's in your best interest. And if you don't, then the insurance company ends up a little bit better off. The key, I think, is to make sure that this is a way to make sure that you never outlive your money.
Right. And I think that's a big fear, especially I'd say more so for women who tend to be widowed later in life and mm-hmm. don't always have the full career behind them, that they do say, I have this much money left, and I don't know if it has to last me 5 more years or 20 more years. I'm 80 years old. I could live to be 100. So therefore, an annuity provides them that sense of security. So I think it does have a place.
Absolutely.
For people.
It does have a place. Now, the number of people that actually purchase annuities with their money is relatively small. Tom, I think you have the stats.
In the last 2 years, 2,520 participants have purchased annuities.
That's in a two-year period.
That's in a two-year period.
But don't you think that's because they don't really understand it, or they have this feeling, I saw some of the comments to your article, that this is a ripoff. Well, everybody charges fees, and this is a net difference, but this is also an investment based on interest rates, like Greg said earlier. Bonds act inversely with interest rates. This acts directly with interest rates, so as interest rates rise, it becomes more attractive. And I'll tell you a war story, but it might help. I'm not a financial planner, by the way, and this will clearly prove that I'm not. This was about 11 years ago, and an individual called up, and this individual's an engineer. Engineers are generally very good managing their money. And he says, I'm leaving federal service. And I said, oh, great. What are you going to do with the TSP? Put it into an IRA and play with it? And he goes, nope, I'm going to buy the MetLife annuity. My comment was, why would you do that? It only pays about 7.3% interest. Well, 11 years later, he's got
he's locked into 7.3%. People buying them today get 3.7%.
Right. So you don't have to buy it today if interest rates are going to rise. And who knows? If we knew that, we wouldn't be sitting here. So they might rise. They might go down. But over the long haul, things go up and down.
I do have a crystal ball, but it doesn't work very well.
As Tammy said, the annuity, it's really for people who want to have that assurance of income for the remainder of their life. And remember, the TSP is part of FERS, and FERS, for FERS-covered employees, has three elements, and two of them are, in effect, annuities.
The Social Security and the FERS benefit.
That's right. And I wouldn't overlook that FERS benefit after 30 years, a 30%, 1% a year. And then after 30 years, it goes to 1.1% accrual. And although it doesn't have the full cost of living adjustment that CSRS has, it has quite good cost of living adjustment, and better than most, that's for sure.
When I look at employees coming into federal service right out of college or high school even, by the time they retire, they're not going to have 30 years. They're going to have 37 years, 38 years of service. So that FERS basic benefit is going to replace at least a third of their income, and then Social Security on top of that. So their TSP, I always look at as the icing on the cake, where you can judge how much money you need from month to month or year to year from that TSP, which brings me to another question I had about the withdrawal options. Because one of the choices are, and a lot of people, I think, make use of this, especially in the first years of trying to figure out how much income they need, is to take a monthly payment from the thrift, where you can elect a dollar amount of, $1,000 a month or $500 a month, whatever it is that you want. And you can change that from one year to the next. Is there going to be any change in the amount of times you can change that election from $500 to $800, from $800 down to $50, besides just a yearly election?
Excellent question. There are.
As you may recall, I've heard rumors, but I didn't know if they had come true.
Right. Well, in recent years, you know that we have allowed people once a year to change it, and it's been at the end of the year, in December. We're going to loosen that up a bit and allow people to make a change at any point in the calendar year. And that'll, from an administrative perspective, it'll stretch things out over the course of the year. Plus, it'll give more flexibility to individuals. This is actually something that was recommended to us years ago by NARF, the National Association of Retired Federal Employees, because they wanted that. Their members were saying they wanted that flexibility. That's right.
Do you have any idea when that might occur?
I don't have a date on that yet. We haven't, as we were talking before,
still,
these statutory.
Still working it out.
That's right. We're working it out.
But it won't take a congressional change to make that happen?
That's correct. It will not.
This option, though, is one of two with monthly payments, correct? There's one option where you say, here, you just calculate it, and they use a life expectancy on your automatic pilot, which, to be frank, I don't think is the better of the two. The second one allows you to drive the bus, so to speak, so you can bring your payment up, you can make it come down, or you can mimic the other option, but you're not stuck with it.
Right. That's correct, yeah. And the one thing we just need to make sure is figured into the mix on there is there is a minimum required distribution. And so we need to make sure that whatever dollar amount you reach, it at least reaches the minimum required distribution. And what this is designed to do is to make sure that Uncle Sam is this money has not been taxed. They eventually want it to be taxed. And so that's designed to make sure that that does create some revenue to the Treasury.
And the other comment with regards to the annuity, no, it's not federally guaranteed, but in some states there's a state insurance commission that would have a guarantee. Now, that guarantee might cap off at a certain dollar amount.
We actually do take a close look at that. And the one of our requirements is that any of our annuity providers has to be licensed to do business in all 50 states. And each state has its own commission, and each state sets its annuity guarantee amount. They generally range from $100,000 up to a high of, I think, about $500,000. And that's a secondary backstop. But the first and most important thing we do is make sure that the provider is financially solvent And that's what we do on an ongoing basis.
So I was going to say, when you look to put out the bid, do you send the bids out? You don't put it in Commerce Business Daily, right? So it's only probably a handful or two of companies that could compete in this arena.
Yeah, there's not a lot of companies that could compete, but it is open to everybody. But it's the requirements that we set that may limit, the mom and pop insurance company down the street from being the annuity provider to the TSP. Not that we're limiting competition to any select group of companies.
What would be the difference if I was buying an annuity through the TSP purchased from MetLife versus if I just called up MetLife myself and bought my own annuity? Have you ever looked at that option for employees or given them any kind of guidance on whether they should shop around, or does the leverage of the size of the government really purchase a pretty good deal with the...
I think it's the latter. It's called a master annuity contract that we purchase with MetLife or whoever it happens to be the provider. And the costs are all built in to that. So you can, compare the products internally to what works for you.
Plus, there's no commission of an insurance salesman
that is
involved,
correct.
Which could also add up to the cost.
That's right.
Okay. And I also understand that some private annuities are not necessarily life annuities. They might limit it to age 85 versus the TSP annuity is
for a life annuity.
Whether you live to be 110 or die at 72.
That's correct.
So I think that would be something to consider if you were shopping around.
Yes.
To ask that question.
Tammy, there were a couple email comments to your article Friday with regards to the annuity, and they said, gee, if I take X dollars out of my thrift, And you don't have to take the whole amount out to buy the annuity, so it could be any portion. But when I move it over to buy the MetLife annuity, there's no tax on the transfer of the dollars. It's taxed when the money comes from MetLife.
Right.
And the person said, so why can't I take out all the money myself and not pay tax? Well, because you can't. You broke the plane. All this is kind of in a tax-sheltered environment, but you took it out of that.
I guess that would be the same thing, too, if I used my TSP to buy my own annuity. Wouldn't I have to pay the tax on it first to withdraw it, or could it go tax-deferred to a private vendor?
You could first send it to an IRA and then buy it through the IRA.
Right. Yeah, okay.
But if you took it out yourself, you just lost it yourself. You broke the plane.
It.
I always say, it's inside of a tax-sheltered house. But you went outside the house, and the wolf is out there.
I had another question on Greg was talking about the required minimum distributions. And for employees who have left federal service, years ago, and they have their civil service retirement that's providing their income, and they've just kind of let their TSP sit there, is there any kind of mechanism that gives those employees a heads up that they're facing that required distribution? Do they get a notice in the mail, or
yes.
What happens in that case?
We have actually a series of notices, and it starts about a year and a half before the year in which folks become age 70 and a half, which is when you're subject to it, because most of this stuff is by tax year. It's not the precise date. So we send out an early warning notice. Then we send out two letters, I believe. Asking people to make the selection because it is their selection. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, if people do not elect a withdrawal, we declare their account abandoned if they're non-responsive. Mm-hmm. And what that does, it simply says you're no longer earning interest here. You have to comply with the rules in order to earn your interest. Tell us how you want to begin your withdrawals, and then we'll put you back in. We'll take the abandoned clause off of you. And this gets back to an area that we were talking about before, that type of monthly payment to qualify for the MRD. Most of these people don't want their money yet. They want to defer receipt of it as long as possible. That's where that payment is very handy to someone. If they just want to take out the absolute minimum that the IRS requires that they withdraw.
And it's very small. At 70 and a half,
that's right.
The IRS is tired of waiting, so they want to collect some tax dollars. But it was 4 years ago, it was fairly ugly. You had to have it out, I think, 12 years if you were male, and 15 years if you were broke.
Mm-hmm.
And now they spread it out to well over 115 years of age. And of course, the amount of money that you're going to get at that point won't buy a coffee. But nonetheless, the early stages of one to withdraw is less than 4% of what's in the pot.
The reminder there is for separated employees who haven't touched their TSP, just to make sure that they keep their address current, because when you start sending those notices out, you want to get them.
Yeah, that is a very important message. And we ask that for active employees who move, that change of address is sent to us generally through the
payroll office.
Yeah, through the
payroll
office.
That's why we're not used to sending it ourselves.
Right. But it's the separated employees that move, that forget to tell us, that is a challenge for us. We do get a lot of return mail, and we're working through the most efficient way to do that. But if I can just put a call out to anybody who's separated and listening, if you move, please, please send us a card. Please let us know.
Okay, Tom, I'm going to apologize. You may have hit this at the beginning of the show, but Mike Causey handed in an email he got this morning, I believe, and he said, I read your article in November 2009. Can you provide a time frame, if available, when the legislation regarding annual sick leave transferred into TSP dollars has been in effect? Did you talk about that at the top of the show?
We have not talked about it yet, no. That's right. Mike brought that to our attention just before as we were gathering. And there, I want to step back a little bit because there are a couple of statements in the question that are not quite on track. First of all, this all began last Labor Day when President Obama announced his intention to simplify rules in this regard and to clarify that tax-qualified plans could accept contributions from leave payments that under the terms of the of employment with that particular employer could be contributed to the plan offered by that employer. Some plans, it applies to leave, to sick and annual leave, because those plans allow the employee to convert unused sick or annual leave to cash. In the federal structure, you're only allowed to convert annual leave to cash, and that only happens for the terminal lump sum payment that one gets upon separation from service. But clearly, that could be a benefit to people in federal service as they're preparing to leave, and they get a chunk of dough just as they go out the door. So we began working with the unions on that last fall to clarify what this was all about. We discovered an IRS ruling that was put out saying that this is something that is now allowable. And so we've been working with the Congress to get legislation introduced to allow people to make that conversion of terminal annual leave value into a TSP contribution.
It's interesting because let's say somebody retires at year end, their FERS or early part, and if they didn't read your article, Tammy, about the best dates to retire in 2010. But again, year end is a very popular day to retire, and people say, can I put IRA money in for the next year? And the answer is yes, based on two things. You're going to get paid your salary, and you certainly aren't going to get paid on the last day of work, so that's going to come in on a W-2. But the annual leave shows up on the W-2 on box one, total salary. Total salary says IRA eligible, and people miss that. Yeah. Anyway, just
but not so, TSP eligible
not
yet.
Not TSP eligible, no.
Currently
but
not
it
allowed.
Is IRA.
That's
okay,
right.
But that'll be interesting if that does change, because I think a lot of people may take advantage of at least part of that payment going to their thrift plan and be able to save it.
Well, I agree, especially because you know people that retire the first day of January, that becomes income in that
next year
in which you're not going to make enough money to make that contribution. Mm-hmm. But now with the terminal leave, once we're able to get that done, you can now, in some cases, maybe even reach the maximum contribution.
I've seen some annual leave checks that would hit that limit.
That's right.
Okay, Tammy got, a number of comments, and this should be clear that these two guys aren't agreeing with this or disagreeing with this. This is just an answer to an email because you're not supposed to do this. And somebody said, listen, I have $250,000 in my TSP. Somebody wants me to take it all out and buy a house. And what should I do? Well, of course, if you take it all out, it's going to be subject to the tax monster, and you could lose a third of it pretty easily with that kind of money. Whereas if you were just to buy the house and have a mortgage, easier said than done in today's environment, and take the monthly payments like we talked about earlier, take out a little bit more than what the payment's going to be, and then have your money working for you. It seems to me that's the better thing. And again,
if you only
Greg or Tom
choices.
Have not made a comment on that. This is just Tammy and I talking. The Thrift Savings Board has not blessed this. Yeah, all right, I understand we have a caller. I'm sorry, caller. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Question on the TSP. A few months ago, there was an article that they were going to try and take your unused sick leave and possibly your annual leave and convert that directly over the cash value of that into your TSP account. And that seems to have died. I can't even find the archived articles on that anymore. What's going on with that?
Well, we're going to have this show archived, and we just talked about it. Probably while you were on the phone making the call, Tom explained it, that they are working on the annual leave to be able to contribute that to the TSP, but it's going to take congressional action. Sick leave will not be eligible to contribute to the TSP, however.
Darn it. I've got a year's worth of sick leave, and boy, that would do so much to my annuity when I retire next year.
Well, good wishful thinking.
Well, just think how good you should feel that you went to work when you were sick for the betterment of the government.
There you go.
Thank you for the call, though.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
All righty. One other comment. I hate to keep bringing in the tax, but I mean, these questions Tammy got from our article are really good. He said, I'm going to get X dollars per month. I don't have to pay tax on that, do I, after buying an annuity? Well, they withhold taxes, if I'm not mistaken, at a flat 20% rate. That may or may not cover the tax.
That's right. Can you elect a withholding from the TSP annuity? Like, do you have the W-4 type form?
That's right. And in certain categories, yes, you can, depending on the type of withdrawal you're taking, add more, have more withheld.
But if you choose to ignore them, they take 20%.
That's right.
But they don't take any state. They don't take state tax.
That's right.
There's no automatic withdrawal. For
doesn't
state.
Mean you don't have to pay the state income
you
tax.
Got it.
It's just not going to be withheld.
Same thing with the annuity. Their base annuity. They have to fill out one of those forms. And if they don't fill out the state form because they figured the feds paralleled the state. Mm-mm. Anyway, let's get off of taxes.
Yeah. I was just wondering, since your crystal balls are working for the future, is there anything else on the horizon that might be a proposed change or is anything else to look forward to as far as TSP legislation coming up?
Our plate is pretty full right now.
So you're still working on the changes that were passed last year.
Yes, quite frankly, we're going to be working on those for a while. Right now, we've got the big project that's in front and center for us is the website modernization plan, and we'll be rolling out a substantially enhanced and new look web design that'll be out starting in May, and then throughout the summer, we'll be enhancing that substantially. So that's a very big project.
Can you give us any hints as to what to look forward to there?
Well, a very different look. The website that we have today is functional, but Tom and I made testimony to Congress, and Congressman Lynch looked at me and said your website is functional, but it's equivalent to Pong. You remember the 1980s video game? That's what he said. So
doesn't have any bells and whistles.
Right. It's functional, but the look and design is vintage 1990s, and so we're going to be working on enhancing that substantially.
That's good. I think people will look, because they like it now, actually, because it's simple and it's easy to navigate. So I think anything you do to improve, it's just going to be further enhancements. I think employees will look for, and separated employees will look forward to using that as a way to keep in touch with what's happening.
Okay. We have about a minute and a half. Just a quickie. Other funds, people were hot for real estate funds until the real estate market fell apart. And then they were hot for gold funds. And I don't even know if they even wrote about diamond funds. But do you see any new funds coming online?
No. And I think this is going to be a constant struggle, is whatever does well last year, somebody's going to call for it. Mm-hmm. There is one thing I should mention here, and I think I can do it within a minute, is that in the legislation, it permits the TSP board to establish what we call a mutual fund window. And that would be a way for participants to select a portion of their assets. But we're not going to take any action on that because there is a very divided opinion among the board that I report to, as well as the union and employee groups. There's divided opinions as to whether we should do that. And so, we've got our plate is full and we'll look at that sometime in the future.
Okay. Tom, final comments?
I'll stick with what we said.
All right. Is it safe to say that the TSP is the world's largest employer-sponsored savings plan?
Yes, there's no question about that now. We've exceeded CalPERS. We are not ahead yet, I don't think, of the Japanese Social Security system or the Netherlands Social Security system. But
well, that's quite a feat.
Okay. Greg, thank you. Tom, thank you. Tammy, it's always great to do the show with you, and we'll be back next week. I can't tell you who's going to be on next week.
I was so focused on today, I don't know either. Check the website.
This has been great. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
To For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also